No, we are ready, and it's time for the business spotlight segment on Long Island. And it's great to have him. Every month we talk to him. He's the great president and the CEO of H2M Architects and Engineers. As mentioned many a time, leading firm of its kind with their fine president and CEO in operation. I believe 87 years, 87th year of operation, hard to believe. And his name, of course, is Richard Heumann. Always great to have you, even in tough times, sir. How are you? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better. I'm glad I'm talking to you today. You know, just listening to you for the you know, 5 or so minutes, and your energy level is awesome. I'm going to look to bottle it and maybe sell it because it's great. But things are getting better, Jay. Thanks. How about you?
I'm doing well. And by the way, I thank you for that. Thank you for the reference. And thank Pintail Coffee for that in Farmingdale. They load me up every morning, and it's like intravenous, you see. It's intravenous at this point, right into the veins. So that supplies all my energy. But it's good to have you. I'm glad you're healthy. Family good. Everything else, I hope.
Yeah. Everything's good. I think that, you know, the fact that, you know, we're finally at a point where we really do see light, I think, is really healthy and beneficial for all of us. So I'm, you know, the way I feel today as compared to when we spoke a month ago is more optimistic. So that's a really good thing.
It's a good thing. So much to talk to you about. I don't even know where to begin. But, you know, I'll begin with what you and I have a lot in common with our love for baseball, sir. And I'll tell you, I'm not feeling good about things this morning. You know, the proposal. Now, listen, everything is about a negotiation. But if you think you're gonna have star players take a 77% pay cut, I mean, please. And listen, Rich, you know, this time around, I'm for the players. I got to tell you right off the bat, I'm for the players. If I would love to see baseball back. It would be so good for the soul. It would be so good for the country. America's pastime needs to be the present time. But in essence, there is no way. I don't care what the circumstances are. If I'm a player, I'm not agreeing to that. I'm sorry. You're asking me to play 82 games. Okay, at this point in time, latest proposal, 82 games, and if I'm a Gerrit Cole, who I've worked so hard to get to that point of signing a $319 million 7-year deal, guess what? I'm not doing it. I am not taking a 77% pay cut. No chance, sir. What's your stance?
Yeah, I think that most of the circumstances, it is, you know, negotiation time. To me, there's a bit of a general tone deafness. You know, if they want to negotiate, they should be negotiating behind closed doors. They shouldn't let stuff get public. People don't want to hear about, you know, any of that because it just it's counter to what Americans are hungry for right now. And I think that you know, when hockey comes back and basketball comes back and if football stays on schedule, you know, the time of the year that baseball used to dominate, they're not going to dominate now. And I think there's a little bit of a risk if baseball as an entertainment industry, you know, turns off too many people, it's not going to be as easy to get them back. So even though, on the face of it, I agree. You know, there needs to be a fairness in their negotiation. I think they have some risk as a sport if they don't, you know, figure out a way to come to terms quick, however they do it. So, we'll see. I hope, you know, what you'd love to hear. You know, I haven't heard anything about, you know, the owners and the players in hockey. I haven't heard anything about the owners and the players in basketball. All I'm hearing about is the owners and the players in baseball, and it just doesn't smell right.
No, it never does. You know that. It's it's the most powerful union in America. We know the Players Association, everything else. But in essence, you know, here's the bottom line for me. If I'm playing half a season and I make $20 million, listen, I'm all with you. Lockstep, $10 million, fine. If you're a rookie and making $600,000, half a season, $300,000. That should really be it. 50% as far as the salary of the cut. I'm not taking anything more. I'm just not. And then players, you know, and again, I get it. It would be so good for the country. It would be a black eye to baseball. Fans won't come back. It's going to take a long time, if any. But the bottom line is, I'm sorry. If you're asking me to play half a season, I'll take half a pay cut. I'm not taking anything more. That's the way. And really, right down the line, I'm sorry. That's the way it is. I don't care if you're Gerrit Cole of the Yankees or Tyler Wade of the Yankees. It doesn't matter to me. And that's the way I feel very strongly about that, because I think owners make a lot of money. I don't want to hear the pleading and poverty all the time. Stop. Enough is enough. I know you're taking the hit. No gate, no fans. I get it. But I'm thinking of the players here. They're putting a lot at risk here. They're not going to be seeing their families every other night. You know, they're going to be locked in to an area, and that'll be it, you know, for the next couple of months. So, you know, listen, there's a lot on the line. Testing still has to be put in play. I do think it's a negotiation. I think it's a starting point. There's a counteroffer to be presented. I get it. We'll see what happens. Right now, I'm not feeling confident, though, sir.
Yeah, I don't feel too confident about it either right now. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I think that you know, you see you know, tweets from some of the players, and at least, you know, some of the early tweets again were just, you know, lacking awareness, but the tweets you see now from the players, you know, speaks more to what's fair. And I think as long as the players, you know, stick to a negotiating strategy about fairness, then they'll come out at least perception wise looking okay with the fans.
Question with Tongue with Rich Heumann, HUM Architects and Engineers, President and CEO. I had a conversation with the county executive of Nassau, Laura Kern, the other day, and the Belmont Arena is back on as far as the building up and everything else. This is your industry, my friend. Phase one underway as of yesterday. The clock is a ticking, and the clock is on, and everything else in play here. Give me your thoughts leading up to. And finally, you know, you hit the metrics and everything else as far as the county, and we're back in as far as the reopening. Give me your thought process as far as events leading up to, and of course, yesterday, how you felt.
So I've got mixed feelings about it, because I clearly understand that there's great risk in decision making from the government's perspective. And, you know, because of that, you know, they, when I say they, you know, in general, the governor, you know, really kind of calling the shots, you know, wanted to ensure as best as he could that, you know, beyond mitigation, we actually got to a bit of prevention. And that was really never something that was talked about early on. It was all about, you know, mitigating. You know, the fact that, you know, construction and manufacturing and some other, you know, outdoor industries opened up here on the island yesterday is fantastic for us. I think it's it was a critical step as the rest of the state had been opening up for, you know, the past, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. I think here, you know, we were all concerned, you know, what if we take, you know, there were some periods where we took a step backwards on one criteria and, you know, oh my God, now what's going to happen? Because, you know, we're all, you know, beyond anxious. You know, I feel as though the, you know, the motor has been revving and the garage door has been closed and, you know, we finally started to inch it open and let some things out. Construction to me is, you know, always a great jump start, a great economic jump start. When you can get construction happening, you know, not only is it, you know, vendors selling, you know, their materials and their equipment, you know, contractors, you know, doing work and helping local economy, but it also then sets the stage for as construction gets completed, then there are more jobs that get opened up. And, you know, Belmont's a great example of that. You know, the quicker we get Belmont completed, you know, it just continues to open up more economic opportunities for us as a region. So I'm thrilled with that. I would have hoped that there wouldn't be such a gap between phases. And I know, you know, I speak to so many people, and over the last, you know, especially the last month, everybody's prepared. Everybody knows what they need to do. You know, guidance has been crystal clear. You know, face coverings and social separation and practicing the right kind of hygiene and you know, temperature monitoring and everything that we know we're going to have to do, you know, once the next phase is open up. People are already prepared today to do it. So really, you know, what the government is looking to do is, you know, just be able to monitor as best they can. Okay, so phase one opens up. If we take a little bit of a step backwards, well, what does that mean? It doesn't change the situation of other businesses and industries opening, because the requirements are going to be the same. So you know, there's uncertainty in that bothers me, because I think it's a little overreaching. And you know, all of us that run businesses have been all over this for the past 2 months. We're all as prepared as we are going to be. And, you know, I think that we should be opening up a little bit quicker.
And I agree with you. And I've been an advocate for that, Rich. I'm not an advocate for the large gatherings on the street and having barbecues and frolicking in lakes and everything else that we saw over the weekend. We have to do it safely. I'm not an advocate for our seniors to be out there yet. But what I am an advocate is for those business owners to survive. And I thought we could have done it a lot sooner. And doing it safely, you know, you wear the masks, distance, capacity restriction, whatever you want to put in play, but get things moving. Please don't open up the Finger Lakes and tell me we got to wait and wait and wait and wait. And then all of a sudden downstate, here we go. And I agree. Now let's not wait 2 weeks, please, between phases. Salons and barbershops need to be open right now. You can do that safely. Wear the masks and everything else. But that's the way I've been kind of pushing it to no avail. We're still probably going to have to wait 2 weeks, although I heard a county exec comment, Laura Kernan-Nassau, stating maybe even sooner we'll see where the numbers are. I don't know. But all I know is we could have done it a lot sooner.
Yeah, I think that I really appreciate and applaud what both county executives have been doing. And County Executive Kern has been very visible. She's been crystal clear, you know, to the point that you just made, that has been, you know, her position all along. And, you know, County Executive Ballone has been the same. I think that, you know, they recognize when you are on the ground and you see how this has affected people in a very devastating way, you know, you want to help, you want to encourage, you want to lead. And I think they, you know, both of our county executives have an ability to, you know, lead us out of this, you know, more effectively and more quickly. And you know, I like when you talk about the bungling of the you know, the nursing homes and how horrible that whole thing was. Unfortunately, that now sets the tone for decision-making moving forward, because nobody wants to make a mistake. So when you try to make decisions based on not making a mistake, inevitably you either don't make decisions or you delay making decisions. So, you know, that was terrible. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other things we should be doing to expedite ourselves opening up. You know, if there's anything we could do to accelerate it, you know, I'm all for that. I think, again, we're all prepared. We've all done everything we need to do to open up safely. There's been a lot of innovation happening, you know, in response to this. And, you know, you need to let businesses do what they do. They're just by the nature of being business leaders and business owners, they know what needs to be done.
And, you know, the other thing that bothered me was, you know, I don't even use the terminology anymore. Somebody brings it up as far as being an essential business. I interrupt and say, you know what? Every business is essential. I don't want to hear this nonsense. Who's essential? Who's non-essential? Anybody who operates these days is essential, because it's essential, in my opinion, to their livelihood. They have an essential obligation to not only provide life for their employees, but for their families as well, to put food on the table. So everybody has an essential business, in my estimation. It's no longer who's up and running essentially and non-essential. I don't want to hear that stuff anymore.
I agree, and 100% agree. And I think, you know, as a result of that, you know, whether or not you consider it to be arbitrary, I now think it's the government's absolute responsibility to ensure that, you know, every single business that was negatively affected because they were considered non-essential, the government has an obligation to prop up those businesses and support them in ways to, you know, have them become thriving businesses again. And to me, you know, that's, as you, again, consider these phases moving forward, it's one thing to say, okay, you know, now you're allowed to open up. It's another thing to now go in and assess the damage that was done and what position is the government going to take in whatever way they need to in order to ensure that these businesses get themselves back up and running. You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Jay. I'm totally on the same page with you on that.
Phil, I just get a bad feeling when people tell me that, well, you can't open up, you can't open. Meanwhile, the people who are telling us that are still collecting their salaries, okay? So let's keep that in mind as well. And they have been since the start of this mess. So, you know, keep that in mind as well. And you bring up something, you know, opening up Pandora's box with these nursing homes. You know, he's gone down a couple of notches. He's done a great job, our governor. But when it comes to these nursing homes, he has completely fumbled the football. And I'll tell you, you have to know policy. You can't. I watch these briefings. You know that, Rich. You can't tell me during these briefings that you don't know. If somebody asks you a question, you are the manager of the state. You cannot refer to Dr. Deer in the Headlights, Howard Zucker, the Department of Health Commissioner, and need an answer from him. You're not getting anything from him. You know that. But you can't. No policy. You must know what's going on. It's been a flip-flop. He blames the president of the United States for what's happening with these nursing homes. You can't do that either. It makes you look bad. He has looked very bad the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's such a challenging situation, and it is unprecedented. And, you know, how you go about making decisions, every decision we make as leaders, some good, some bad, but you have to own every single one of them. And, you know, you can't own the good ones and not own the ones that don't go as well. It shows a lot when you're, you know, I give him so much credit for being very visible to, you know, every single New Yorker. And that takes a lot, because, you know, you put yourself out there, and then you have to answer for, you know, bad decisions or questionable decisions. And to me, when those circumstances arise, you really need to, you know, just, you know, stand up good, better, and different, and continue to do those things, because it's not going to change what happened. You know, looking to divert where responsibility is doesn't change what happened. I think, you know, all of us need to own the things that happen based on the decisions we make, and then, you know, do the best we can to move ourselves forward. And that's really where he needs to be.
And please, I don't need him to be visible on Ellen. I don't need him to be visible on Hoda and Jenna. Neither do I need to for him to be visible on the Stephen Colbert show. I need him to be visible more, heard more, like he has been in the past on LI News Radio on this morning show. That's where Long Islanders need to hear from him. They don't need to hear about Ellen DeGeneres. He's on Ellen DeGeneres. Please, if you know what I'm saying, sir. Listen, you stay. I had to get that in. You stand by because there's still a lot more discussion to be had here, okay? You stand by, my friend. Rich Heumann is with us, CEO, president. What a job he does, H2M Architects and Engineers. You know, I'll tear him down for a couple of things, but I'll give him props. And he made his way to Washington yesterday, Andrew Cuomo did, Rich Heumann. And it was about infrastructure. And certainly, you know, listen, the state needs it. Long Island needs it. We had Kevin Law on prior to you, made some great points regarding what was needed. I give Cuomo a lot of props. You know, the fact that the state gives in more than it takes. You know, the Mitch McConnells and the blue state mentality, that's a bunch of garbage, especially coming from a guy who's third from the bottom as far as what he takes more than he gives, his state of Kentucky. So in essence, I give Cuomo a lot of credit. They have not been engaged in a big way on the same page, him and the president. They've been at odds, we know, more times than not. But all in all, he made his way to the Oval Office yesterday, and we'll see what happens. But there is a lot of infrastructure dollars that need to be poured in here. Give me your take.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's been, you know, a positive coming out of this is, you know, this was a historic economic impact. And, you know, at least in American history, we know that when you invest in infrastructure, then you know you compound the benefits of you know, not just sparking the economy, but also have the economy start to thrive. So the benefits of that and the recognition, frankly, at all levels of government, you know, and we, I'm sure we've talked about this in the past, when the president was you know, when he was still a candidate and he had an agenda. You know, he was talking about a $1 trillion infrastructure bill as, you know, one of the initial things he wanted to start to work on. And, you know, it's probably one of the few things that hasn't moved. So, you know, for all the other things that, you know, he's accomplished, you know, the fact that 3.5 years we haven't had a major infrastructure investment, I think has been missed opportunity, but at least there's an understanding now that if we can make a major investment into America's infrastructure, clearly, you know, New York, and we're completely agree with the governor, is that New York historically has always led the way in major infrastructure projects, and the needs continue to be significant, and, you know, the more that we can do to, you know, modernize ourselves and create the, you know, the type of working environment where, you know, you get the societal benefits of infrastructure improvements, but you also get, you know, you get jobs and you get, you know, all sorts of economic benefits. I'm hopeful that this really becomes a priority. And if they, you know, get it in this, you know, next rescue package, and, you know, New York needs to get at least its fair share. You know, the Kevin and the governor are completely right. And, you know, what I think one of the tough things about us is, you know, we get this kind of, you know, broad brush generalization of being a high tax state, so it's our problem. Well, you know, taxes go in lots of different places. So we're also a high tax state in regards to our contribution to the federal government. So, you know, boil it down. Don't, you know, don't just pass us aside because, you know, we've got this tag of being a high tax state. Therefore, we don't know how to manage ourselves. Therefore, we're not going to give you money. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's an easy talking point that is unfair. So, you know, hopefully the governor and the president get themselves through that because, you know, funds need to come to our state without a doubt.
Without question, you mentioned a key word there, and that is jobs, employment, getting people back to work. That's what happens with infrastructure infusion of dollars. You know, you get these projects in play, Gateway and everything else, Hudson Rails, everything. You know, you have to have this. And, of course, I tell you this, Rich, because, you know, just in is the latest numbers. You know, 2.1 million Americans filing for unemployment last week, and that, pushes the total coronavirus job losses now to 40 million plus. So that that really kind of puts it in perspective, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, I'm you've got, I think, opportunities now. You know, we've been talking about these things for a couple of months now. You know, my fear is that, you know, those that are unemployment and are, you know, receiving what the current benefits are, we need to make sure that there's enticement and incentive when businesses get themselves back on their feet, that all of these people come back to work. And, you know, that needs to be the focus. That's why I was a really strong proponent for, if you need to get money to people's hands, you know, have the money go through the businesses and let the businesses keep these people on the payroll. You know, in the end, they're still getting the financial benefit that they need, but it's not based on, you know, going on to unemployment and being supported by the government. It's basically being supported by your business. This way, once your business gets going, you can really hit the ground running because you don't have to rehire people. The whole process of rehiring people takes time. The talent pool is not going to be the same. People, you know, might look for opportunities to switch industries, and it's not as simple as now I'm going to reopen business and, you know, 40 million people are now going to all go back to the jobs they had before. It just doesn't work that way. So I get, you know, it was a monumental crisis, and it had to be about getting money into people's hands just so people could survive as individuals. But I really believe the way to get money to people was, you know, through their employers. But, you know, knock on wood, hopefully the unemployment will turn around quickly.
I am hoping beyond because, you know, we need a bit of a boost. Now, you're so active with the HIALI. Rich does a great job, serves on the board. His business right up there, you know, as far as being voted upon way back, seems like a centuries ago when we covered you as far as the awards that you've received on all of this. But it was interesting. Last week we had on Rich on the show. We had on Karen Borstein, president and CEO of the Family Service League of Long Island. Kevin O'Connor was with us from the B&B Bank, president and CEO. Does a great job there, as well as, you know, Terry Lesmicelli, the president and CEO of HILI. And, you know, it was so impressive how Kevin and Karen were stepping up. You know, Kevin's such an integral role as far as the PPP and the loans for small businesses, what his bank is doing, really stepping it up. Karen as well, Family Service League, but all that she does. So, you know, it's just good to see some of these organizations within the confines of HIA still going strong, still looking out for the people out there. And, you know, as always, Terry doing a great job there. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I've spoken to Terry, and, you know, you had mentioned Kevin's name before. You know, it's as important as ever to have really strong advocates for business. And, you know, we have some of the strongest business organizations anywhere. And the commitments, you know, these organizations are struggling also. You know, it's not as though they've been far from it. They've been pretty heavily affected by, you know, just the significant impact of the economy. And, you know, but with that, they continue to show their value. They continue to be, you know, voices for business. They're looking for every opportunity they can to be supportive and get themselves out there to the greatest extent possible. And, you know, Terry and I, you know, we probably email every few days about what's happening. And, you know, I think the greatest hope in this is, you know, you said it, you know, kind of in the beginning. 2020 really started with, I think, optimism in lots of different places. And as devastating as this was to all of us, you know, if it can truly be a pause, and if we could come out on the other side of this and get ourselves to the ground and up and running as quickly as we can, then I think we've got a chance to really drive the second half of 2020. You know, I mean, that's been my goal here, and I know, you know, those that are advocating for business, that's their goal, is to continue to have plans in place, continue to, you know, look for the opportunities to, you know, help our region revitalize itself. And I can't say enough about, you know, what Terry does with HIALI and what Kevin does with LIA and, you know, what Mitch does with Libby. And, I mean, there's just all these organizations are so valuable to us.
Without question. They are the economic engine. As far as the East goes, you know, what Silicon Valley is to the West, we know how important HIA is to the East and, of course, the Long Island area. And I tell you, it's good to hear, at least, there was a mention regarding the annual HILI trade show and conference, Mr. Heumann. I had heard through the grapevine that it could be in that first week of October. I don't know the venue yet, but it's at least good to hear a bit of a discussion. I told Terry, I promised I will be there for that one if that happens on the 7th of October. So that's a good thing. You know anything more on that, by the way?
You know, I don't have any more detail. What I do know is that the guidance that's going to come from either the state or the CDC is going to be so significant in how it drives decision-making of things like the trade show, because, you know, the trade show, you know, for HILI is really the event of the year. And it really, is, you know, has become a foundation of the organization and stabilizes the financial standing of the organization, because the participation is fantastic. You know, but if there are going to be, you know, density limitations, you know, mass gatherings are you know, going to be casualties of what's happened through the coronavirus, then your planning needs to change. And how you go about engaging as many people as you can and allowing them to realize the benefit of the networking at a trade show like HILI is going to be critical. So, you know, I think, you know, organizations like ours are, you know, putting plans in place, but, you know, we're not going to be the, you know, the ones to be able to settle the terms on what a trade show like that is going to look like. And I haven't seen that kind of guidance yet. I think it's going to be difficult until the state lets us know what something like that can look like. You know, do you have virtual elements to a trade show and in-person elements to a trade show? How do you go about doing those things? So, you know, more to come on that, but, you know, clearly a lot of planning and thought is going into it right now.
You know, listen, I always love those shows. I love doing the interviews. If I have to do it wearing a mask, I will do that. I don't care. I love that, that whole presence, you know, of being there. And if I have to wear my Bane of Batman mask, Mr. Heumann, I will present that to all on that day, if that is to happen. Now, we got a couple of minutes remaining. You run a great shop over there. You've been doing it for a long time, a couple of decades almost. In essence, have you had your fill of Zoom meetings? Because I know you have. And the fact of the matter is, you know, it's becoming the new normality now in life. So the big question I have for you is, well, it's a two-parter. One, how has that been going for you? And do you see that as being the new norm as far as your company is concerned going forward?
I absolutely see it as being an element of the new norm. I think that, you know, we're going to have to come up with, you know, some guidance on, you know, how to use it, when to use it. You know, what it really became with, you know, so we've got, you know, 475, 480 people. And, you know, over 90% of the staff over the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months has been working remotely. So you had no choice. You know, there were no face-to-face meetings. So, you know, everything was Zoom. And what started to happen was everybody is, you know, either sitting at their kitchen table, you know, working during the day, or sitting at a desk, constantly accessible. So calendars were getting inundated with Zoom meetings. So, you know, my calendar started to, you know, I would literally have 10 Zoom meetings in one day. And it's so easy to schedule people through a Zoom meeting. And, you know, I've actually gotten to a point, I had a face-to-face client meeting yesterday, and I was thrilled. I was telling Joyce as I was walking out the door, you know, thank God I'm actually going to see somebody face-to-face for a meeting. And we ended up just, you know, after we met on our business, we spent an hour just talking about, you know, what's happening. I forgot how much I missed physically going and meeting with someone and having a conversation. And there's so much lost in, you know, meetings through Zoom and WebEx and Microsoft Teams and all these other platforms that none of us should get too comfortable using, you know, that kind of approach to meetings. I think there's clearly got to be a balance between, you know, how you use them and when you use them. I've been talking to, you know, Liz, who is my chief HR officer here, about creating our internal guidance so that, you know, people don't become too reliant on electronic devices. You know, it doesn't do enough for relationships. It doesn't do enough for you know, the right kind of social interaction. You need to get up and get it out of your office every so often. So I do have a concern about that. I have a concern that if people felt as though, you know, this is the new normal, I think we're going to lose a lot in business. So, you know, my suggestion to anybody would be take a step back, evaluate it, you know, make sure you understand what the benefits of meeting through, you know, Zoom or another virtual platform is, and be clear with your employees about what your expectations are so that, you know, they don't fall into certain habits that might hurt their own development or, you know, maybe negatively affect relationships that we have with our clients.
It's interesting. People have been telling me, you know, they actually put in more hours working from home because it's not like, you know, when to quit. You know, when you're at an office, you know, you kind of look at your watch, you know, whatever time it is, and you hop in your car and you're ready to go home. You know, when you're home already, it's almost as if, hey, why even look at the clock? I'm just going to do my job. Do you find that also? Do you find people have been more productive in that type of venue than they were even way before this whole thing? What about the aspect of that as a business owner for yourself?
I think there's some truth to that. I think that with, you know, over the last couple of months, with everything shut down and everybody's priorities changing, and you know everybody retreated, right? So it wasn't like there was, you know, there was buzz and activity happening. It was, okay, now I'm just going to focus on doing my job. So I believe that there were limited interruptions, and people did have an ability to be much more focused on getting their job done. So I do believe that they had an opportunity to be productive. And I also think that, you know, those that are high performers would have taken advantage of the fact that they could remain connected from home and they could put in some more time and get more things done. And we see those things. So I definitely saw some of that here. And, you know, I think, you know, you have to balance that with employees that might not be as high performing, where you're not getting the same level of productivity out of them as you might if they were in the office. So I think, you know, the entire dynamic over the last 2 months, you know, needs to be evaluated. You take the best you can out of it, and you allow whatever the positive elements were to, you know, form whatever your new normal is going to be for running your business. And I know for us, you know, there are some things that we found as being very advantageous to business, but, you know, there were definitely some things that I found over the last 2 months that, you know, I'm going to make crystal clear to staff that that's not going to be part of our approach to business moving forward. So I would expect that all business owners and business leaders would be doing the same thing.
You see, that's why you're a great president and CEO, that type of philosophy, and it shows. It really does. And that's why, you know, you lead the way with 450-plus people all the time, and you do it well. Now, before we end session here, sir, so I'll ask you this. I mean, are you expecting to see Pete Alonso firing missiles off his bat all over America this summer? Are you envisioning that right now, or I guess maybe just waiting till your gangrene New York Jets hop on the field come September? What do you see first? Do you see baseball? Do you see football? Do you see no baseball? Do you see Mr. Alonso? Where are you at with that, my friend?
I definitely think you see baseball. I think they would be out of their minds to not somehow, you know, get themselves, you know, into the lives of everybody who loves baseball. I think that would be a huge mistake. So, you know, however they resolve the negotiations, I have to believe that they're going to. You know, why baseball would be the only sport to, you know, leave itself out and when, you know, the country's looking to recover, I think that would be crazy on their part. So I'm looking forward to Alonso. I think that, you know, I'm you know, you've got a guy in the Bronx who's a little taller and wears 99, but I'm going to put my guy up against your guy any day.
Hey, take it easy now. Those are fighting words, you. Why, you. Hey, listen, I could care less about baseball right now, the way they're arguing. I'm very comfortable in my zone at night, watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians from 2014, watching my 600-pound life, watching the roll-offs, Little People, Big World on Tuesdays. You know what? I'm in a comfort zone, sir. 90-day fiance, I'm loving it. I don't need my Yankees. I don't need 99 up there. All rise. I could care less.
Oh,
I'm,
man,
lying.
I got you.
I'm lying to you, man. I'm lying to you. I need my baseball back. Hey, listen, great stuff. Great stuff, as always. You stay well. You stay healthy. I'll talk to you in June. If you need anything, you know we're here for you, as always. But it was fint. You know, my elixir today was talking to you, and I thank you.
Well, every time we get to talk, it's great for me too. And stay safe and healthy. You know, the end of this is near, which is good for everybody.
I'm with you, brother. Good talk with you. You stay well. We'll talk.
You too.
All right. The great Rich Human, H2M, Architects and Engineers.